Everybody loves chalupas. Yes, you know it's true.
I dream of little monsters crawling up my leg.
This is Rish Outfield.
I fear they'll come.
And this is my podcast, The Rish Outcast. And I am in the car. I am driving. I have a long drive ahead of me, hours. And I like long drives. And I like to flap my jaw. And so that's what I'm doing. I imagine I will get 3 or 4 Rish Outcasts out of this trip. It's about an 8-hour drive. And if you don't mind, come along with me on this trip and sit here in the passenger seat.
You know, with Chewie out of commission, I could use another co-pilot. Easy, Chewie.
So, Into the Furnace is the first novel I have released. And as of this recording, it's not quite ready to go. The book is finished, but there are formatting issues. There's probably a few more typos. And I'm going to do an author's note at the end. I really like to write author's notes. I was introduced to that concept through Stephen King's Skeleton Crew, which I believe was the first short story collection I ever read from him when I was a boy. And I loved that at the end of the book, he talked a little bit about where the stories came from or about what the stories mean. I loved that. And when I was about 16, I did that. I can't remember what... Oh, okay. Yeah, that year, 16, the year I was 16 and I turned 17, I wrote a bunch of stories because it was the year we got a computer that had a word processor. I wrote a bunch of stories and I thought it would be fun to make a little collection of these short stories and give them to my friends. I probably gave out 2 copies. Tell you how many friends I had. But I thought it would be neat at the end to have a little afterword and say something about where the stories came from or who they're dedicated to or etc. And yeah, I've loved doing that all these years later. It's just fun. And it's cool to write it right when I first finish the story or, you know, while I still remember where they came from because I forget. On a lot of stories, I don't know where I was anymore when I wrote them. I don't know what inspired the characters' names or, you know, if there was originally going to end a different way and I changed my mind. It's just, you know, time does that. It takes your memory. And so I'm still going to write that and probably some of the things that I say in this episode. And I did an earlier episode right before I published Into the Furnace where I talked about the story, about where it came from. But I think it would be wise to put this episode out after the book has existed for a while. And this can be the spoiler episode where we talk about the story in detail without worrying about, you know, tipping my hand and giving away the big surprise, the big secret. Maybe this should be the 3rd episode about Into the Furnace. This is the spoiler cast. Yeah, that seems smart. So I've got one when I first published it. I'll do a second one after this when I do the audiobook. And then this one is after, the aftermath. After the Furnace. Oh, I like that. So, January 2015, I wrote on a piece of paper, Too Big, Anklevich. Has anyone ever written a Western story with a dragon in it? And I handed that to him, and he said, probably, but that doesn't mean you shouldn't write one. And the rest is history. So I tried to write this as a story, and it ended up becoming a novel, and that's fine. You know, it's just about 50,000 words, and it could have been a little longer. But, you know, it probably could have been a little shorter, too. I wrote it. And I've had a couple of questions along the way. But the biggest question was, how do I market this? What kind of cover do I put? How do I describe
the book?
Because it would be so easy and useful to have in the synopsis, Sheriff Willis Ford goes to a small New Mexico mining town and discovers a medieval dragon living there. That, guys, in one sentence, is everything you need to know about Into the Furnace. Whether it's good or not doesn't matter. Whether it's tongue-in-cheek or not doesn't matter. Whether it's an adventure story, whether it's a horror story. That sentence tells you all you need to know. You know whether you want to read the story based on that sentence. And even more so, a cover that shows a cowboy speaking to or facing off with a dragon shows you everything you need to either buy the book or not buy it. Hell, that image sells the book. I can see it in my head. It's striking. But the story is about a guy who gets a second chance. He goes to this town where people are disappearing, and he wants to be a good sheriff. He wants to find out, why are people disappearing? That's what the story is about. And the central mystery is, what is happening to the people? And I believe that that answer is given in chapter 14 of Into the Furnace, which is, what, a third of the way through the book. And if you bought the book because it's got a dragon and a cowboy on the cover, my worry was that you would be bored to tears because you already know it's a friggin' dragon. And I'll go back to that sentence in a minute. What I wanted to sell the book was me being a writer with a few fans, you know, a podcaster with quite a few fans, and those fans bought it, and there was some word of mouth. I didn't expect this to be a bestseller. I didn't expect to make much money on it. I just wanted the people that liked my stuff to buy it and have a good experience with it. But I didn't want to give away the surprise. I'm like J.J. Abrams in that way. There were certain things that I was willing to let out, but the dragon aspect was not one of them. And that's a double-edged sword, because I realized that the dragon is the only reason someone who doesn't know who Rish Outfield is would buy this book. Because, okay, Big was probably right. Yeah, there have probably been Western stories with dragons in them before. Probably they're out there. Maybe there's a whole ton of them. Maybe there's a book series about them. But I have never read one, and I've never heard of one. And that makes this premise a little bit unique. At least unique to me. It's certainly never something I have written about. So, do I keep my integrity as a writer who wants his readers to be surprised? Or do I hope to sell copies and give away the big surprise? And yeah, it's a rhetorical question, because I've chosen not to give away the surprise. I've chosen to take the road less traveled and to make less money because of it. It's not as though I'd instantly sell 1,000 copies if there was a dragon on the cover. Although you never know. People sell copies of self-published books for the weirdest reason. Like, I remember narrating one when I first got onto Audible's, you know, matchmaking program or whatever, where you can audition for books and say, oh, I'll do that one. I auditioned for a book because the cover had a girl on it that was so ridiculously beautiful. You know, she was a model, and she'd probably been photographed in front of a green screen, and they, you know, made sure to see that she had breasts. And then in the green screen background, you could put whatever you wanted. In fact, I don't think this one even had anything, just white in the background. But she was so beautiful that I was like, oh, well, gosh, I'd like to read the story or the book or the novella about this girl. I'm an idiot, right? But the funny thing is I sent the guy the audition. I got the job. I did the audiobook. And then he published the audiobook with a different cover that didn't have this girl on it. And as soon as I saw that cover, I said, oh, okay, well, I wouldn't have auditioned for it if that had been the cover. I chose that project with my loins. That was my way of saying that, you know, the cover can sell copies regardless of what's inside. Don't judge a book by its cover, guys, but people do. Abigail Hilton told me, what you're writing is a weird Western. There is a sub-genre of fiction called weird Western. And if it's a Western with a vampire in it, it's a Western with unicorns in it, if it's a Western with the Fountain of Youth in it, if it's a Western with honest politicians in it, that's twice I've done that, it's qualified as weird Western. I'd never heard that before, but Abby is into publishing a lot more than I am. She knows words and genres, phrases, things that I just don't know. She's the one that told me, Rish, you write magical realism. And she sort of told me what that was. And 6 months later, I forgot it again. And she said, no, what you write is magical realism. And she told me what it was. And 6 months later, I forgot what it was. And here we are podcasting again, and I don't remember what magical realism is. Except for that's what I write. So, weird Western. I'll either put that on the cover, you know, Into the Furnace, a weird Western by Rish Outfield, or have that be one of the keywords. And that's what she said, is you need to do weird Western. And the reason you want to do that is you don't want somebody thinking this is a traditional Western. Real Western. A Louis L'Amour book. And they get this and discover that it has a dragon in it. She said, because you'll get a 1-star review on Amazon, and in the subject line, they will write, it has a f***ing dragon in it. And I don't know if I'll bleep the F word or not. It's probably more amusing if I do. Although, it could be warned, one of these times I'm not going to bleep it. And that reminded me of The Village, which was M. Night Shyamalan's follow-up to Signs. M. Night wrote and directed The Sixth Sense, Unbreakable, and Signs, which were to me a trio of absolutely fantastic genre movies. I loved all three of those movies. And then the fourth movie, he had supreme ultimate power with the studio. He could do whatever he wanted, and he was going to do this movie called The Village, and he was going to control what information got out there. I'm digressing, but at the same time, I'm not. After The Sixth Sense came out in 1999, I saw it opening day or the day after opening, but a couple weeks later, I went to a second-run theater, what we call the Dollar Theater in my town. And there was a trailer for The Sixth Sense, which is called the release trailer. And I often don't see these, but a release trailer is something that is put into theaters after a movie has come out. And it's only successful movies, usually, that get these. But this release trailer not only gave away what was wrong with Cole Sear, which I think was in the TV spots and all that stuff, but it gave away what happened afterward. It gave away the ghosts and their what they wanted, and showed Cole helping the ghosts, showed a deleted scene of him helping an old man find diaries and such. And it ended with a conversation, which is the conversation at the end of the movie. it gave away everything but the final twist that happens in the last 2 minutes of the film. And that's a shame if that's how you saw The Sixth Sense. I wish that I hadn't seen the I'm Ready to Tell You My Secret Now trailer. Or it was a TV spot or something like that. Because I saw that before the movie came out. Because, you know, that's what marketing people do. They want to get butts into seats. You've never heard of this guy that's directed this movie. And it's not like Bruce Willis is a movie star and people will go see a movie because Bruce Willis is in it. That's me being sarcastic. Anyway, by the time M. Night got to the village, he could control the marketing of his film. And so he gave the central conceit, which is there's a bunch of people that live in, you know, Puritan times, and they live in this little village that's isolated, and in the woods outside the village there's a monster, and people are not to enter the woods under any circumstances or the monster will get them. And that was the premise that M. Night wanted his audiences to know. And right before that movie came out, and it might have been 2 months, might have been a month, it might have been a week, but it was significantly before I saw it, and I saw it on opening night, because that's what I do on those movies that I'm excited about, an internet meme started, and it was when internet memes were new, and there wasn't even that term, and the internet meme said, "It's a fucking bulldozer." And I first saw that internet meme, because there wasn't Facebook or MySpace or any of that stuff yet, but I saw it on the IMDb message boards for The Village. And you remember that moment in Empire Strikes Back where Vader says, "Obi-Wan never told you what happened to your father." Luke reacts really badly. And Vader says, "Search your feelings. You know it to be true." Yeah. I'm not old enough to have seen Empire Strikes Back when it first came out and had the conversation with people about whether Vader was Luke's father or not. The kids that were older than me always talked about it as, you know, we debated it for 3 years whether Vader was Luke's father. But I didn't live in a world where there was any question of that because I saw Return of the Jedi before I saw Empire Strikes Back. But Vader says, "Search your feelings, you know it to be true." And Luke does. He knows it's true. None of those kids ever talked about the end of the movie when Vader says, "Luke." And Luke says, "Father." He doesn't say Vader or any of that bullshit. He says, "Father." Luke knows that it's true. And maybe they could have backpedaled in Revenge of the Jedi if they had wanted to. Because there is a scene where he's talking to Yoda and he says, "Is Darth Vader my father?" But thank God that they didn't. Because that is the most powerful moment in the Star Wars series, is that revelation. And it's more powerful because it's not a lie, as the kids argued about it on the playground. When I saw that meme about the village, I searched my feelings, and immediately I knew it was true. And the funny thing is, I went and saw the movie anyway, even though this had been spoiled by an a-hole. Oh, here's the funny thing. On IMDb, they bleeped fucking, but they left bulldozer, so the damage was done. I went and saw that movie, and it's not a bulldozer. It's not. It's a costume that the village elders have access to, and they dress someone up in the costume to perpetuate the myth that there is a monster in the woods. But the bulldozer comment, the bulldozer meme, tells you what the big twist is. The big twist is not that there isn't a monster. The big twist is that the story takes place in modern times, and that these are all people who are on some kind of time-isolated commune pretending that it is the 1700s. And there's that. That had already been spoiled for me just because of this thing. And so when Abby said, all somebody has to do is write, it's a dragon. I thought about that meme. And I thought about my experience. And I was talking to Big the other night. And I said, you know, I'm really nervous about this book. Because I've worked harder on it than any other bit of writing that I've done. And I'm finding these little plot holes and moments that should be fleshed out. And scenes that are sort of sketchy because I didn't really want to write them. I just wanted to get on to the next conversation or the next action beat. And I'm worried, you know, that it's not good enough and that maybe I shouldn't publish it yet. And Big said, publish it. You need to just publish it. Get it out there. Put it out there. I will promote it for you. You don't have to be a master of promotion because I know you don't want to do that. But just put it out there so people can buy it. And whatever you do, don't ever go on to Amazon and read the reviews. Read the the reader comments. Big knows me really well. He knows that it would really upset me if there was somebody that gave it one star or that somebody said it's a f***ing dragon. And it's likely that somebody will do that because that's what the internet is. It's an anonymous place where you can hurt other people or you can be mean or you can be cruel, you can be racist, you can be petty because it's anonymous and because it's almost 100% consequence-free. And you and I have seen, if you've ever gone to Amazon, you have seen reviews for movies that haven't come out yet. You've seen reviews for books where the reviewer actually says in the review, I have not read this book, but I don't like the author's politics, so I'm going to give it one star. Or I quit after the first page because the N-word was on there or whatever. And they leave those reviews up. They leave a review that says, I haven't seen this movie, but I'm going to give it 5 stars because it has Emma Stone in it. Or, you know, so if somebody put, it's a f***ing dragon, in the subject line, and it was their review, a 1-star kind of thing, there's nothing I could do about that. Big is right. Whatever I do, don't go on to Amazon and see the reviews that are there. So that's something that I've thought about, and, you know, I've got this guy, I'll talk about it in this, the episode, the audiobook episode, this guy at work, working on the cover for me, and he's a really, really good artist. I'm way better than I'm used to. I mean, I'm used to doing the covers myself. Oh, well, I've talked about that. I was just going to do this simple cover based on a photograph that I took. Because I don't care about the cover art. I only care about, A, it getting out there, and 2, that, you know, the 5 people that are fans of me have the chance to buy it. I want to move on to the next project. So, you know, now that it's out there, it was fun to do the audiobook in the way that it's fun to do any audiobook. When I get to do fun narration or fun voices, I get to do accents or stuff. But it was also the hardest one that I've had to do just because it was so slow going. It would take me on average about an hour, about 45 minutes to an hour for each chapter, to record each chapter. And if you look, you know, some of the chapters are long, but not 45 minutes long. They'll be like 21 minutes long. A lot of it was just, I wanted things to sound right. I wanted things to be as good as they could be. And so often, I would stop and I would rewrite a sentence, or I would add a new sentence, or I would add a whatever you call Will said. You know, I want to say that that's a modifier, but it's not. You know, an attribution line, stuff like that. There were a couple of times when I stumbled upon something that I thought, huh, I should do research on that. I should find out if it's New Mexico as a state or New Mexico as a territory. And it was a territory. So that would eat up a lot of recording time. Hence, a lot of editing time, too. And there'd be a couple times when I'd go on and at the next chapter, 2 chapters later, I'd find a contradiction. You know, we said it would be 2 days. And it's clearly been 3 days, so what do I do? And in those, I would have to wrestle with, okay, do I go back and change the earlier line? Or can I retroactively change it by putting in some line here? And there was a moment when I reached, it's the point where Samuelito has come to town and they're trying to formulate a plan. And I got to the next chapter in my manuscript where they sort of make a plan, and it wasn't there. And I thought, oh, geez, I must have missed typing it up. Or I saved over it. I found with laptops, sometimes you lose text because there's that little pad at the bottom of the keyboard, which I despise, by the way. And sometimes you click on it by accident or you touch it, and it highlights text. And then if you push any button whatsoever, that text is replaced. And if that accidentally happens, you lose paragraphs, I've lost pages. And only if I notice that do I recover that, retrieve the lost part. So I thought maybe I had lost the chapter that way, or the segment of the chapter. But there was also the possibility that I never wrote it at all. I just skipped to the next moment. And so I had to stop in my tracks, and I stopped for a couple of days, really, on the audiobook. I, you know, searched through my notebooks, hoping I could find that chapter. And all I could find was, when I was first sort of sketching out, outlining what the book would be, I had a little bit about Will and Antonia moving to a new house. And in that little segment, you know, I said, you know, during the night, he can move into this new house, and during the day he can do this. But I guess I never wrote the this part. Maybe I did and I saved over it, like I said, but I had to sit and write that section. And it was hard because I wanted to, in as few words as possible, just get that information out there so that I could go on and not lose the momentum that I had on this audiobook. So I wrote this scene, and I believe it ends up being chapter 26, might be chapter 25, but it sort of patches the whole. But it also created some new contradictions, and I had to go back and reline a couple of parts, re-record, and hopefully stick them in there so that it was unnoticeable that I had re-recorded. And luckily I have a really nice microphone right now. A recording setup that it doesn't suck. And because of that, I am able to re-record lines and splice them in there, and it sounds relatively seamless. I can't help if I've been talking for a long time and my voice starts to go out, as mine is right now, and then later my voice sounds fresh, because those lines don't blend so seamlessly. You can tell there's something changing in my voice quality. But as far as the sound quality goes, it's almost always consistent. So anyway, I did that. There was one chapter that was super long, and I wasn't satisfied with it, so I decided to break it into two chapters. And I made it two chapters, and then I sort of fleshed out the beginning of the first chapter and the end of the second chapter, so they both ended up being fairly good-sized chapters instead of just one massive chapter. The problem is that it's never going to be perfect. It's never going to be historically accurate. It's never going to be 100% believable. I mean, A, because it has a dragon, but two, because, you know, I have to come up with a way to defeat the dragon. I have to. I just have to understand that because it's never going to be perfect, it's okay to just release it as it is. Do you know what I'm saying? If I view it as a work in progress right now, I'll never release it, ever. A part of me says, well, oh boy, you still can come up with excuses not to release it. And maybe Austin will be late in the audio. Maybe Austin will be late with the cover art, and you won't have to release it. Yay! In which case, I will release it with my crappy cover art. Or maybe I'll have Big Whip up something crappy. Because you can always swap out your cover art. right? The thing is, it has to be out there, whether it's done or not. And so, does this represent the best work I could possibly do? Yes and no. I think it's the best book I can write, but if you gave me another 6 months, I might be able to make it a little better, a little longer, a little more satisfying, have some of the plot threads not just end. But it's a book. It's where my talent has led me in 2016. You know, to the best of my ability, I have written this. And now it's out there. And you can listen to it. Or you can get the text if you want. It's cheaper. But the audio is where it's at. The audio is what I really worked on and what I really do well. So anyway, kids, I think we've reached the end of another Rish Outcast. There is a lot more I could talk about. I'd kind of like to talk about Pinchback. I kind of like to talk about Jaws. I kind of like to talk about how I did the voice for Pinchback or chose to do his voice. And the these and thous and how they're not 100% consistent, because there are times when that's just too unwieldy and too unnatural. Nevertheless, our time has run up. Our time has run out. And it's time for me to go my way. And I'm going to do another Rish Outcast soon. So if you listened to this one and you listened to that one, I thank you. And if you bought a copy of Into the Furnace, I appreciate you doing so. I really do. These stories are for me, as you know. But it's been really interesting to discover that the other people like them as well, or get something out of them, or enjoy hearing me talk. It's still hard for me to get my head around that. But thank you if you're one of those people that dig it, that digs this show. I appreciate it. I continue to do the show. So, you know, it's partly for me, but it's also for you. So thank you. Uh-oh, I'm yawning. I'm only, what, an hour and a half into this drive. The Rish Outcast is produced under a Creative Commons attribution non-commercial, no derivatives 3.0 license. And it's my understanding that you can copy this file, you can share this file, you can download this file, and as long as you don't alter it or take credit for it or try to sell it, you know, it's free. So that's it. That's how Creative Commons works. Although I could be wrong about that too. Good night.
Music starts now. Now and then I think of when we were together. Like when you said you felt so happy you could die. I told myself that you were right for me, but felt so lonely in your company. But that was love, and it's an ache I still remember. An ache in my loins. Yes. Here's a bit of uncommon knowledge for you. You can get addicted to a certain kind of sadness, like resignation to the end, always the end. So when we found that we could not make sense, well, you said that we could still be friends. But I'll admit that I was glad that it was over. But you didn't have to cut me off, make out like it never happened, that we were nothing, an And I don't even need your love, but you treat me like a stranger, and that feels so rough. No, you didn't have to stoop so low. Have your friends collect your records and then change your number. I guess that I don't need that though. Now you're just somebody that I used to know. Now you're just somebody that I used to know. You know the rest. Now. Well, that's very interesting that you'd give that side of the story. Is it all right if I take the microphone and give my side?
Sure.
Now and then I think of all the times you screwed me over, but had me believing it was always something that I'd done. But I don't wanna live that way, reading into every word you'd say. You said that you could let it go, and I wouldn't catch you hung up on somebody that you used to know.
But you didn't have to cut me off, make out like it never happened and that we were nothing.
And I don't even need your love, but you treat me like a stranger and it feels so rough. No, you didn't have to stoop so low. Have your friends collect your records and then change your number. I guess that I don't need that though. Now you're just somebody that I used to know. Somebody
that I used to know.
Somebody.
Now you're just somebody that I used to know.
Somebody that I used to know.
Somebody.
Now you're just somebody that I used to know.
I used to know
that I used to know.
That I used to know
somebody
that I used to know.
Okay, I may need to do that part over again.